My laws are just, my ways are right. They're all you need to fight the fight. Tear down the walls of Babylon and pay her back. She caused your need, war she made you lack.
Welcome to the Remnant Reading Room, featuring the book entitled Come Out of Her, My People, by C.J. Custer. This book was a major step in my walk of finding the true worship, the way our Father wants us to not only worship, but to live, and to exalt His name among the nations. Join us as we embark on this walk together to find truth and freedom from idolatrous ways. If you would like a copy of the scriptures included in today's program, you can find the download link by clicking on today's program in the station schedule at zion.org. That's spelled TSION.ORG. And now, let's begin today's reading.
What have you sown? But seeds of doubt, I hear your cries and shut them out. Tear down the walls of Babylon and let her sink, washing in my word and rid you of the stink.
Come out of her, my people. Chapter 4, Part 2, pages 104 through 110. The Abomination of Desolation. Yahushua said in Matthew 24:15 that it will be seen, or more correct, called to attention to, in the end time, that the abomination of desolation, or abomination that lays waste, is set up in the set-apart place. Matthew 24:15. So when you see the abomination that lays waste, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, set up in the set-apart place, he who reads, let him understand. This abomination that lays waste is also prophesied of in Daniel 9:27, Daniel 11:31, and Daniel 12:11. Daniel 9:27. And he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week, and in the middle of the week he shall put an end to slaughtering and meal offering. And on the wing of abominations he shall lay waste, even until the complete end, and that which is decreed is poured out on the one who lays waste. Daniel 11:31. And strong ones shall arise from him, and profane the set-apart place, the stronghold, and shall take away that which is continual, and set up the abomination that lays waste. And Daniel 12:11. And from the time that which is continual is taken away, and the abomination that lays waste is set up, is 1,290 days. Who is this? In 2 Maccabees 6:2, he is revealed to us as the deity Zeus Olympios, or Baal Shaman, as the Syriac version of 2 Maccabees 6:2 renders it. The great sky deity or sun deity is and has been set up in the set-apart place. This shocking revelation is confirmed by the similar revelations of Isaiah 14:4 and 14:12-16, where he revealed to us as Hillel, that's Hillel or Hillel, the shining one or bright one, interpreted amongst others as the sun deity, or as Jupiter, or Zeus. Isaiah 14:4. That you take up this proverb against the sovereign of Babel, and say, how the oppressor has ceased, the gold gatherer ceased. Isaiah 14:12. Have you fallen from the heavens, O Hillel, son of the morning? You have been cut down to the ground, you who laid low the Gentiles. Isaiah 14:13. For you have said in your heart, let me go up to the heavens. Let me raise my throne above the stars of El, and let me sit in the mount of meeting on the sides of the north. And Isaiah 14:14. Let me go up above the heights of the clouds. Let me be like the Most High. Isaiah 14:15. But you are brought down to the grave, to the sides of the pit. 14:16. Those who see you stare at you and ponder over you, saying, is this the man who made the earth tremble, who shook rains? In 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 3 through 4, he is revealed to us as either the man of sin or the man of lawlessness, or else by being represented by someone or some object. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3. Let no one deceive you in any way, because the falling away is to come first, and the man of lawlessness is to be revealed, the son of destruction. 2 Thessalonians 2, 4. Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called Elohim, or that is worshiped, so that he sits as Elohim in the dwelling place of Elohim, showing himself that he is Elohim. Not only have various names, surnames, and name derivatives of the ancient sky deity, such as Zeus, alias Jupiter, been retained in the religion of the Western world, but above all, we find that an even more tangible form of Zeus or Jupiter worship exists to this present day. It is commonly known and also told by the guides of the Vatican that the bronze statue of Saint Peter in Saint Peter's in Rome is but the ancient pagan image of Jupiter, which was adopted, canonized, and sanctified. This same image is being reverenced, and his one big toe regularly kissed at certain ceremonies. Do we need more concrete proof of our Messiah's prophecy about this than is recorded in Matthew 24:15, and by Daniel in Daniel 9:27, 11:31, and 12:11. Read those scriptures now. Matthew 24:15. So when you see the abomination that lays waste, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, set up in the set apart place, he who reads, let him understand. Daniel 9:27. And he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. And in the middle of the week, he shall put an end to slaughtering and meal offering. And on the wing of abominations, he shall lay waste, even until the complete end. And that which is decreed is poured out on the one who lays waste. Daniel 11:31. And the strong ones shall arise from him, and profane the set-apart place, the stronghold, and shall take away that which is continual, and set up the abomination that lays waste. Daniel 12:11. And from the time that which is continual is taken away, and the abomination that lays waste is set up, is 1,290 days. Thus, Yahushua reveals to us in Matthew 24 that the end time deceit and apostasy will be hallmarked by increase of lawlessness and by the sky deity or sun deity set up in the set-apart place or temple or religion. In contrast to this, Messiah reveals to us in Matthew 24:20 that the remnant few will be keeping the sign of the eternal covenant, the Sabbath. Matthew 24:20. And pray that your flight does not take place in winter or on the Sabbath. We will now proceed to Yahushua's final message for us in Revelation chapter 6 through 22, especially chapters 11 through 22. The end time apostasy is clearly conveyed to us in these scriptures. We have previously mentioned that the Ten Commandments were given on two tables, the first table being the basis for the religious law, or vertical love, while the second table is the basis for the ethical or social law, or horizontal love. It is generally accepted that, at the time of Messiah's sojourn of earth, the Jews erred mainly as far as the second table was concerned. They were somehow keeping the first table, even if their oral laws, which were added, caused them to differently interpret the third and fourth commandments. For instance, they made a burden of Sabbath keeping. Instead of the original intention of it being a delight, by adding 39 additional rules pertaining to Sabbath keeping, as we find recorded in their Mishnah. The Jews also avoided the use of the name Yahweh, a tradition or man-made law which is not supported by scriptures. Yahushua remarked on this deletion of his father's name when he reprimanded them for having taken away the key of knowledge. Luke 11:52. Woe to you, learned in the Torah, because you took away the key of knowledge. You did not enter in yourselves, and those who were entering in, you hindered. The Interpreter's Dictionary of the Bible, Volume 2, page 407, says that the name of our Heavenly Father is the key to understanding the biblical doctrine of Elohim. Messiah prophesied about the restoration of his name and his Father's name when he said in Matthew 23:39, quote, "For I say to you, you shall see me no more until you say, Blessed is he who comes in the name of Yahweh," where he quoted from Psalm 118:26, and was referring to the restoration which is to take place before his second coming. Just to restate those verses, Matthew 23:39. "For I say to you, from now on, you shall by no means see me until you say, Blessed is he who is coming in the name of Yahweh." And Psalm 118:26, Blessed is he who is coming in the name of Yahweh. We shall bless you from the house of Yahweh. This can only refer to his second entry into Jerusalem. In Luke 19:38-40, we read of his first entry into Jerusalem. When the crowd called out this verse, Psalm 118:26, they must have used his name, as it is written in Psalm 118:26. For some of the Pharisees asked him to rebuke them. They must have objected against the crowd using the name, because the rabbis had forbidden such a practice. However, Yahushua did manifest his Father's name to his disciples. We find this in John 17:6-26, and Hebrews 2:12. John 17:6. I have revealed your name to the men whom you gave me out of the world. They were yours, and you gave them to me, and they have guarded your word. And John 17:26. And I have made your name known to them, and shall make it known, so that the love with which you loved me might be in them, and I in them. And Hebrews 2:12, saying, I shall announce your name to my brothers. In the midst of the congregation, I shall sing praise to you. And he promised to make it known to us too. In that same verse, John 17:26. And I have made your name known to them, and shall make it known, so that the love with which you love me might be in them, and I in them. Where did the rabbis get the idea of avoiding or suppressing the name from teaching the people that the name is ineffable, unutterable? We have already touched on this, but would like to discuss it more fully. Leahy, Forerunners and Revivals of Christianity, page 37, says, the ineffability of divine names was an old idea in Egypt, especially in the Osirian religion, where it forms the base of the story of Ra and Isis. So the name of Osiris himself was said to be ineffable. The name of Marduk of Babylon is in the same way declared ineffable in an inscription of Neri Glisser. The name of Yahweh became ineffable directly after Alexander. In every case, the magical idea that the god might be compelled by utterance of his secret name seems to be at the root of the practice. Unquote. This is confirmed by A. H. Sacy in his Religion of the Ancient Babylonians, page 4, where he writes, quote, religion has always loved to cloak itself in mystery, and a priesthood is notoriously averse from revealing in plain language the secrets of which it believes itself the possessor. The priesthood of Babylonia formed no exception to the general rule, and the true pronunciation of divine names was carefully hidden from the uninitiated multitude. Unquote. Furthermore, it is well known that the Greeks, for a long period of time, preferred to avoid the names of their deities and rather call them by a title. Usually, Kyrios or Theos were used. Thus, the unscriptural teaching of the rabbis of avoiding or hiding or masking the name was something which they had learned from the Egyptians, Greeks, and Babylonians. Their decision to avoid or hide or suppress the name was significantly taken just after they came from Babylonian captivity. What was the ultimate result, all over the world, of this decision by the Jews to avoid or hide or suppress the name? Just this. In all the countries of the world, the name was replaced by a title which was previously used for a pagan deity of that particular pagan country. In many cases, we find that the proper name of the local pagan deity was adopted to stand for the name of Yahweh. In the Polish translation of the scriptures, Pan Bog was, and still is, used as a rendering for Yahweh Elohim. Both Pan and Bog were pagan deities. In South Africa, the ancient pagan deity names Modimo, Kulunkula, and Utixo were brought into the translations of the scriptures of three different African languages to call the Almighty by. Recently, we read that in the Magutar language of southwestern Venezuela, the name Wananeri became used for the name of our Almighty in the translation of the scriptures. Who was Wananeri? In this recent publication of the United Bible Societies, it is openly admitted that Wananeri is the, quote, lyingest, cheatingest, immoral character, unquote. Their pagan, quote, cultural hero, unquote, their mythological figure. And, quote, with one bold stroke, unquote, the horrible past of this pagan deity was, quote, reinterpreted, unquote. This shocking syncretism, identifying our mighty one with a pagan deity, in fact, the paganization of our Almighty One, happened in the same way as many centuries ago, in defiance of the clear commands of Yahweh, which instruct us that the name of pagan deities must be destroyed, not used. Deuteronomy 12:3. And you shall break down their altars and smash their pillars, and burn their asherim with fire. And you shall cut down the carved images of their mighty ones, and shall destroy their name out of that place. Quote, and do not mention the name of other mighty ones, nor let them be heard from your mouth. That's from Exodus 23:13, the NASB version. Let's read that in the Scriptures version, too. Exodus 23:13. And in all that I have said to you, take heed, and make no mention of the name of other mighty ones. Let it not be heard from your mouth. We have deviated somewhat. To return to the point we made, in Messiah's time, the horizontal love was neglected more than was the vertical love. In contrast to this, we find in Messiah's final message to us in Revelation chapters 12 through 22, the religious law, the vertical love, is the burning issue. We read here how Yahushua repeatedly exposes the idolatrous worship, also called fornication, generally interpreted as spiritual fornication. Spiritual fornication means pagan idolatry or mixed worship. The Greek words porne, P-O-R-N-E, porneia, P-O-R-N-E-I-A, pornos, P-O-R-N-O-S, pornuo, P-O-R-N-E-U-O, have been translated as harlot, fornication, fornicator, or whore in the King James Version, but they all derive from the same basic Greek word as listed above. Modern translations have used other words as well, such as sexually immoral or prostitute, as we also find in the Revised Authorized Version. We have preferred the King James Version's rendering of these words in this book. All these words may also refer to literal fornication, including the sensual symbols, as we have already seen. Nevertheless, it is generally accepted that these words primarily refer to spiritual fornication or spiritual harlotry. If we count the Greek words porne, porneia, pornos, porneuo, in Revelation 12:22, we find that they appear therein no less than 14 times. Another word that points to idolatry is the word abomination or abominations, translated from the Greek word dilogema and deluktos, used in Scripture to denote an idolatrous object or idol. We find this in Revelation 17:4, Revelation 17:5, 21:8, 21:27, as well as in Matthew 20:15, as we have already discussed. Let's read those scriptures. Revelation 17:4. And the woman was dressed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup filled with abominations and the filthiness of her whoring. Revelation 17:5. And upon her forehead a name written, a secret, Babel the Great, the mother of the whores and of the abominations of the earth. Revelation 21:8. But as for the cowardly and untrustworthy and abominable and the murderers and those who whore and drug sorcerers and idolaters and all the false, their part is in the lake which burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. Revelation 21:27. And there shall by no means enter into whatever is unclean, neither anyone doing abomination and falsehood, but only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And Matthew 20:15. Is it not right for me to do what I wish with my own? Or is your eye evil because I am good? We further find idolaters twice in these final chapters of Revelation. Other words and figurative speech also points to this idolatry and apostasy, such as unclean things in Revelation 17:4, every unclean and hated bird in Revelation 18:2, abundance of luxury in Revelation 18:3, and a habitation of demons, a prison for every foul spirit in Revelation 18:3. Revelation 17:4. The woman was clothed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a gold cup full of abominations and of the unclean things of her immorality. That's the NASB version. Revelation 18:2. And he cried with a mighty voice, saying, Babel the great is fallen, and has become a dwelling place of demons, a haunt for every unclean spirit, and a haunt for every unclean and hated bird. And Revelation 18:3, because all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her whoring, and the sovereigns of the earth have committed whoring with her, and with the merchants of the earth have become rich through the power of her riotous living. Therefore, we find a cloud of witnesses in this final message of Yahushua, which reveals to us that this mystery Babylon, the great harlot and mother of harlots, is indeed the instrument responsible for making the inhabitants of the earth drunk with the wine of her fornication. We saw that in Revelation 17:1-5. Revelation 17:1. And one of the seven messengers who had the seven bowls came and spoke with me, saying to me, Come, I shall show you the judgment of the great whore sitting on many waters. Revelation 17:2. With whom the sovereigns of the earth committed whoring, and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her whoring. 17:3. And he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, covered with names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. 17:4. And the woman was dressed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup filled with abominations and the filthiness of her whoring. And Revelation 17:5. And upon her forehead a name written, a secret, Babel the Great, the mother of the whores and of the abominations of the earth. Please note, this wine of fornication is not given to the earth's inhabitants by Babylon of her own accord. No, she has done it because, quote, Babylon was a golden cup in Yahweh's hand that made all the earth drunk. The nations drank her wine, unquote. Jeremiah 51:7, Babel was a golden cup in the hand of Yahweh, making drunk all the earth. The nations drank her wine. That is why the nations went mad. We're asked to read Jeremiah 25:15, too. Jeremiah 25:15. For thus said Yahweh Elohim of Israel to me, Take this wine cup of wrath from my hand, and make all the nations to whom I send you drink it. Our Elohim is responsible. He has caused it to be. He is the one who sends strong delusions to those who believe not the truth. Therefore, do not blame Babylon. We have only ourselves to blame because of our disobedience to his covenant law, the eternal covenant, with the Sabbath as its sign. We have invited his wrath, and therefore he sent us strong delusion. He has given us up to worship the host of heaven. And he has used Babylon to do it. At first, wine makes you feel happy, but it then begins to dull your senses. And the more you take of it, the more difficult it becomes to discern between the truth and the lie. Quote, pause and wonder. Blind yourselves and be blind. They are drunk, but not of wine. They stagger, but not with intoxicating drink. For Yahweh has poured out on you the spirit of deep sleep and has closed your eyes, namely the seers. That's Isaiah 29:9-10. Let's read Isaiah 29:9-10 again in the Scriptures version. Pause and wonder. Blind yourselves and be blind. They are drunk, but not with wine. They stagger, but not with strong drink. 29:10. For Yahweh has poured out on you the spirit of deep sleep, and has closed your eyes, the prophets, and has covered your heads, the seers. Why has this happened? Quote, because they did not receive the love of the truth. Thy word is the truth, John 17:17, that they might be saved. John 17:17. Set them apart in your truth. Your word is truth. And for this reason, Elohim will send them strong delusion, that they should believe the lie, that they all may be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 10 through 12. 2 Thessalonians 2:10. And with all deceit of unrighteousness in those perishing, because they did not receive the love of the truth, in order for them to be saved. 2 Thessalonians 2:11. And for this reason, Elohim sends them a working of delusion for them to believe the falsehood. 2 Thessalonians 2:12. In order that all should be judged who did not believe the truth, but have delighted in the unrighteousness. Then Elohim turned and gave them up to worship the host of heaven. Acts 7:42. So Elohim turned and gave them up to worship the host of the heaven, as it has been written in the book of the prophets. Did you bring slaughtered beasts and offerings unto me during 40 years in the wilderness, O house of Israel? This is again found as a source of the mystery of lawlessness, the great apostasy, of which we read of in 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 3 through 12, and in Matthew 24, 12 through 15, as well as in this final message of Yahushua in Revelation chapters 12 through 22. 2 Thessalonians 2, 3 through 12. Verse 3, let no one deceive you in any way, because the falling away is to come first, and the man of lawlessness is to be revealed, the son of destruction. 2 Thessalonians 2, 4, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called Elohim, or that is worshipped, so that he sits as Elohim in the dwelling place of Elohim, showing himself that he is Elohim. Verse 5, do you not remember that I told you this while I was still with you? Verse 6, and now you know what restrains for him to be revealed in his time. Verse 7, for the secret of lawlessness is already at work. Only until he who now restrains comes out of the midst. 8, and then the lawless one shall be revealed, whom the master shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and bring to naught with the manifestation of his coming. Verse 9, the coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power and signs and wonders of falsehood. Verse 10, with all deceit of unrighteousness in those perishing, because they did not receive the love of the truth, in order for them to be saved. Verse 11, for this reason, Elohim sends them a working of delusion, for them to believe the falsehood. 2 Thessalonians 2:12, in order that all should be judged who did not believe the truth, but have delighted in the unrighteousness. And Matthew 24:12-15. Matthew 24:12, and because of the increase in lawlessness, the love of many shall become cold. 13, but he who shall have endured to the end shall be saved. Verse 14, and this good news of the reign shall be proclaimed in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end shall come. And verse 15, so when you see the abomination that lays waste, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, set up in the set-apart place, he who reads, let him understand. By what means has the great harlot, as an instrument in the hand of the Almighty, done this? By means of, quote, the wine of her fornication, unquote, which she has given to all the inhabitants of the earth to drink, out of, quote, the golden cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication, unquote. Revelation 17:4. Revelation 17:4, and the woman was dressed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup filled with abominations and the filthiness of her whoring. The words abominations and fornication speak of idolatry, as we have already discussed. The passage in 2 Thessalonians 2:3-12 speaks of the same time as that which Messiah reveals to us here in Revelation 12-22, especially here in Revelation 17. The word mystery is found in both. In 2 Thessalonians 2, we read of the mystery of lawlessness. And here in Revelation 17, we read of mystery Babylon. It reveals to us how this mystery had taken over, quote, while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way, unquote. That's from Matthew 13:25. The Scriptures version of Matthew 13:25, but while men slept, his enemy came and sowed darnel among the wheat and went away. In this all-important parable of the tares, or rather the darnel, in Matthew 13, Yahushua gives this parable and then explains this parable too, revealing to us that while men slept, the enemy sowed the seed of lawlessness. That's Matthew 13:41. Matthew 13:41. The Son of Adam shall send out his messengers, and they shall gather out of his reign all the stumbling blocks and those doing lawlessness. Satan is the one who sows the seeds of the tares or darnel in Matthew 13:39. Matthew 13:39. And the enemy who sowed them is the devil, and the harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are the messengers. The tares, or darnel, is identified by Yahushua himself as, quote, all things that offend and those who practice lawlessness. Matthew 13:41.
The final message of our Savior ends with his revelation of the shocking condition of the world in the last phase of the end time. In Revelation chapters 12 through 22, he refers to idolatry, spiritual fornication, abominations, as we have already detailed, in no less than 24 places. Thereby, he exposes the mystery of lawlessness, mystery Babylon, as a religious system which is particularly identified as being idolatrous. Having rejected the vertical law, the religious law, the basis of which is the first table, consisting of the first four commandments, in fact, the church has changed or rejected or set aside much of the religious law. This is the outcome of the merger of the religions, which came about at the time of Constantine. Previous to this time, the seedbed was prepared by the half-Christian Gnostics, the partly Gnostic Alexandrians, such as Clement and Origen, the prevailing or the predominant sun worship of the Roman cults, the influence of the Neoplatonic philosophy, and the Alexandrian method of allegorizing the scriptures. Also, this merger was made more acceptable to the persecuted messianic believers because their severe persecution was thankfully stopped by Constantine. This resulted in them having much goodwill towards Constantine. Moreover, the ground for the merger or compromise had been prepared by the concealment of the name Yahweh. The emperors of Rome had been sun worshippers and also regarded themselves to be sun deities. Emperor Constantine was no different than his predecessors. The only difference was that he ended the persecution of messianic believers. He started to fraternize with them, and he sought their cooperation for his own political ends. For example, to bring about peace, unity, and strength in his empire. Thus, a sun deity worshiping Roman emperor used his fraternizing and his political power to merge the messianic belief with that of the predominant sun worship. Constantine even assumed the chairmanship the chair of the Pontifex Maximus at times, such as at the Council of Nicaea in the year 325 CE. His son, Crispus, before his father beheaded him, also took the chair at this Council of Nicaea. The great mystery of lawlessness became established. The system which annulled, changed, or set aside the religious laws of the true worship, that worship which was primarily given to Israel of old, and subsequently given new life by Yeshua Messiah.
This is all that we have time to read today. We will finish the last part of chapter 4 in our next session.
Starting on page 110
through page 114. That's the end of today's reading. Be sure to join us next time as we continue reading more from Come Out of Her, My People. To see when the next program will air, go to the schedule on our website at zion.org. A copy of the scriptures we read today can be found by clicking on today's program in the station schedule on our website. To check the schedule and download a copy of the scriptures included in each program, go to tsion.org. Be sure to join us next time for more about why our Elohim tells us to come out of her, my people. Thanks for listening to today's program.
Has God put it on your heart that you may be a part of the remnant of Israel? Have you ever wondered what the order of the 144,000 in Revelation chapter 7 is? How about the order of the tribes on the stones of the high priest's breastplate? Learn the answer to these questions and more in Eliyahu Ben David's five-part video series entitled The Remnant Tribes of Israel Seminar. Plus, learn the basic function of each division in the order of the tribes of Israel and which division your tribe belongs to. This seminar can go a long way in helping you to see the big picture of where you fit into the order of Yahweh's remnant nation. View the seminar free of charge at our membership site, Zion Tabernacle. To sign up and learn more about what other free resources you'll get as a Zion Tabernacle member, go to zion.org and click Join Us. That's TSIYON.org. Then click Join Us.